My name is Huda Amari, and I am Palestinian and Iraqi on my mother's side. And I was raised in the UK. And I am an activist and one of the co-founders of Palestine Action. I've been doing Palestine activism for quite a long time, quite a while. And recently, we co-founded Palestine Action, which is a direct action group based predominantly in the UK right now, but we're looking to expand internationally, and we focus on using direct action as a means to end complicity with Israeli apartheid. Specifically, we target the company Elbit Systems, but we can talk about that in a little bit.
I'm Richard Barnard, also co-founder of Palestine Action. I've been involved in many direct action groups prior to Palestine Action, including Extinction Rebellion at the very beginning of it. And also prior to Palestine Action, I'd done actions against Elbit Systems, which again we'll go on to later, but in a kind of sporadic and small group way, never kind of getting the public imagination or bringing on lots of people and being very sort of insular. And that's sort of part of the reason I think behind why I think Palestine Action has been so successful is because it looks out rather than looks in and brings in people from other movements.
It's also a very young organization, right? When did you start? Was it 6 months ago or a bit more?
It's just 7 months ago. So it was the 31st of July, 2020. So it's
Okay.
only been about seven months,
Yeah.
which is crazy when we look back at all the stuff that's
Well,
happened.
yeah, it is crazy. And it's very good and it's very interesting. That's what we'll get back to that. I think it's to analyze why you guys have been so effective, while the organization that is still very young. Okay, very good. So can you also tell us why you choose direct action? Instead of other ways of protesting, I guess.
With direct action, it's basically envisaging the future you want to see and making it reality. I think for myself and for other people as well, who've probably been doing activism for a long time, you kind of get very frustrated with appealing to other people, appealing to the governments, appealing to councils or politicians, appealing to the institutions to divest from companies and the banks and all of these things. But there is always a barrier, and we don't necessarily have, we have a lot of power in our own hands, but other means make us feel a bit disempowered. Whereas direct action in itself is very empowering because anyone can be part of it in some way or shape or form. And actually, physically, if it's blockading a gate, if it's being on top of a roof, you are shutting down that factory for that day. So you're directly making it happen, and you're making a direct disruption to that factory and stopping them from being able to make what we oppose, you know, these weapons which are used to kill Palestinians and people across the world. And so we directly have that power in our hands to do that. And the way we see it as well is if people went day in, day out, week in, week out, and shut down these factories, they'd have to close. And I think for many people, including myself, I felt very frustrated at sharing Facebook posts. And you know, you wake up feeling frustrated, and sometimes the most empowering moments is when you're part of something like that. Because for that moment, if there's three or four of you on a roof of a factory which makes all of these millions of pounds from death around the world, you've managed to shut that down and take that power back into the hands of the people. So I think that's one of the main reasons.
I think for me, really simple. It works. It's the only thing that ever has. Yeah. All these other things move things so slowly. Bureaucracies that we build up even within well-meaning and well-intentioned NGOs. Direct action is the only thing that actually gets the goods. So for us, it's a strategic choice. The other things, really, to be honest with you, they don't work. And therefore, that's why we chose direct action as being the crucial thing for us. I also think that we're aware of, you know, direct action has been used for many years, but we're also aware of the zeitgeist. What's going on in the world now? I've referenced Extinction Rebellion already. It's the right time for this thing, yeah, for this stepping up. This is what the world's like. More and more, especially young people, understand the futility and the pointlessness of the political class and the political systems. And those of us from a working class background also don't want to get into, and some of us through poor education just can't get into those ridiculous debates where we don't understand half the words. But what we can understand is the oppressed nature of the Palestinian people. And what we can also understand is that we can do something about it. And that shutting a factory by sacrificing our own bodies, our own liberty, is something very easy to understand and brings in people of all types. So we often also talk about inclusivity, and direct action is often said, well, it's not that inclusive because only certain type of people can do it. Now, I want to say in our movement, we have not designed it to be particularly inclusive, but, you know, we have, you know, prominent people of colour. We have more women than men, young women. We have people who have retired. We have disabled people. You know, if you wanted to give all those things, we've got them all in there because it's inclusive, because you don't need to have a university education to understand that this works. It's a simple process. That's an evil arms company doing evil stuff to the Palestinian people, and we're going to shut it by using our own bodies.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's focus now on the subject of your direct action, which is the Elbit. It's a factory, right?
Yeah. So Elbit is Israel's largest private arms company. They market their weapons as tested, and often when they bomb Gaza, and we've seen it in 2014, they killed 2,200 Palestinians, over 500 children. In 50 days. And they use this as an opportunity to market their weapons as tested. So they literally are profiting from the deaths of the Palestinian people. And then they use these facts to export these weapons to other oppressive regimes across the world, right? So they have Gaza as the testing site, and then the whole, all these oppressed people across the world as potential targets for Elbit's weapons, which we're seeing is what happens. And Elbit actually has 10 sites in the UK. They're global, all around the world, but they have a big presence here in the UK. I think that has a lot to do with the UK's alliance with Israel in the first place. But for us, I think, especially coming from a UK context, you know, we had the Balfour Declaration here, which essentially started from the UK, where they were giving away the land of Palestine. And now, to this day, they continue to help to let these companies build weapons which are tested on a population which is mostly children. So they, you know, they supply from the drones to the tanks to the ammunition. And the thing is with these companies as well is they're never being built in front of the people who they actually used to kill, right? Otherwise they just wouldn't be able to build them. Because if you saw your family member or someone was going to get hurt, you'd run in the way automatically. You'd do something beforehand to try and stop it from happening. But they're being built in front of us as people who are in the UK, who are in the Western world, who are global from and distant from these things. And we have to take that, get to a point where we go, for the sake of humanity and for the sake of standing up against racism and discrimination and people being killed every day, if the weapons are being built in front of us, it's our responsibility to do whatever we can to stop it, as if it was our own families.
I think I just want to add, in terms of the locations, especially here in the UK, it's quite frightening. They're often picture postcard villages and towns. There's one not far from where we are, actually, which is like a beautiful, beautiful place. And nobody really knows what's going on there. And when you start to talk to the locals, and, you know, no disrespect to the locals, lots of them, I would say, were right-wing conservative types. But when you tell them, and in fact, there's a great quote from one recently, was saying, oh, there was a protest here a few months ago, and there was this woman, no idea who it was, who was on top shouting from a tannoy. And she said, I was pushing my child along, and she was talking about children being killed by the things that were made in here. And it stopped, and it stopped her. And at that moment, she changed. And I think those sort of things are really important, that when we find out where these places are, and they often use, in this case, they use a name that's a subsidiary name, so it doesn't sound so bad. But when we find out where those are, and people generally, I believe, are good people, and when they hear that, they come on board and go, well, I don't want this made. I don't want a place here that's making parts to go and kill people. And, you know, and I think the same would apply to lots of other places. And another example would be in the north of England. There's a factory making these things, and Elbit Systems sell to their people, which are used on the Kashmiri community to oppress them. And in this place in the north of England, there's a large Kashmiri community in that very place. It's just bizarre when you think about it. And the more our actions expose and show that to people, I think more and more people come on board and understand this and then find out about that company and specifically the stuff that it's doing.
Next time, we will talk about the recipe of a successful direct action campaign.
There's three crucial elements to us in a successful direct action campaign. And the first one is disruption. It must disrupt what's happening.